This is File 56. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Kathy Shortell, the clinical director for 25 years at the Salisbury Visiting Nurses Association. She's going to talk about her job, the Salisbury Visiting Nurses, and anything else that she can think of pertaining to whatever. We'll start with, what is your full name?
Kathleen Shortell.
And your birth date?
February 17th, 1950.
And your birthplace?
Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Your parents' names?
Robert and Elizabeth Pierce.
Do you have siblings?
I have five.
And they are?
By names?
Well, what do you have? Do you have brothers?
I have one sister, Julie, who's the oldest. And then I have four brothers, John, William, Michael, and Dennis.
Is Dennis spelled with one N?
One N.
Good.
And I am the third in the lineup.
Number three. Where were you educated?
College was St. Anselm's College in Manchester, New Hampshire.
And your degree?
I have a Bachelor of Science in Nursing.
Why did you want to become a nurse?
Well, I had helped and observed a nurse taking care of my grandfather, who was taken care of at home quite a number of years ago, before home care was really probably as vital as it is today. And in watching her take care of my grandfather and the care that she was able to render to him and the comfort that it brought to my family, I thought that was something that I wanted to pursue. So I became a candy striper at the local hospital and then went on to be trained in the nurse's aides program and then came back to that through my college education. So just being able to help people and put the science of it together with, you know, how to fix things and take care of things and manage things, I found it fascinating.
And you still do, as I can
still
tell.
Do. Yes, yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. In the reading of the history of Salisbury Visiting Nurses, the first nurse came from Henry Street in New York.
Right. Could one you of the settlements.
Give me a little background on that, please.
They were like tenement houses and settlements that took care of people, and they went out to the community, into the apartment buildings and ran the clinics in the local areas. We had a very progressive thinker up in this area who went down to the Henry Street settlement to bring this person up here to work. And she went around in, first by horse and then eventually by a car to visit the homes and to take care of the ore mine workers and their families and the community at large. There was a home here for mentally challenged people as well.
Dr. Knight School for Imbeciles.
Right.
Who was the progressive thinker that started this?
Her name was Rose Parsons.
All right.
Let me get the book.
Tell you all the details.
And the nurse's name was Henrietta Van Cleef.
Van Cleef.
Good.
Yep.
And remember, she hated the car.
Yep.
She loved the horse.
She loved the horse.
Hated the car.
Correct.
Okay. What is the focus of the organization? What's their prime reason for being?
The main mission for the agency is to take care of people in the community, in their settings at home, to render the care necessary to keep them in their homes and in the community, and hopefully restore them back to their functional status to serve the community. So it's to take care of the people here and maintain them in this environment.
And what or how have some of the programs expanded?
We have really embellished the wellness programs. We've always done, we've done well baby clinics, we've done blood pressure clinics, we did flu clinics in a small format. Now we have gone out to residences and businesses in the community. We've gone to the private schools, we do the local public schools as well. We offer, you know, flu clinics out there. We've done a movement class to help with the elderly with their balance, to help reduce the number of falls and just teach them, you know, how to properly move and turn and maintain their balance without the risk of falls. or to use the proper adaptive equipment and to make concessions to that.
Now, when we were talking about this, you said something about home care being all-inclusive, and you gave an example of going into a home and looking in the refrigerator.
Right.
Why would you do that?
Right. What we do is you're not just taking care of the person, you're taking care of them in their home, so you want to make sure that they're able to have the food that they need, have the food provided. If they can't provide the food, we look into programs like Meals on Wheels that helps deliver already prepared meals to the home. It provides a lunch, a hot lunch as well as a cold bag for later in the day. But we want to make sure that the patient has the proper tools to maintain their health in the home, whether it be taking care of themselves, taking care of their pets, and you want to make sure that they have, oil in the tank for the heat in the house, or that they have electricity, or who's paying their bills. So we don't just do the one physical thing. We're taking care of the whole person, which means their physical well-being, their mental well-being, their emotional, their spiritual. We make sure that they have a medical social worker as part of the package or a therapist. We also ask if they have a local church that they might belong to. Do they need their minister or their rabbi or whoever involved in their care so that those people also make home visits? And obviously we need the permission of the patient to do all these pieces. So we always ask them who else is involved and needed in their well-being, because it's their whole comprehensive piece, not just like their physical ailment that we're dealing with.
And this is 24/7?
We do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We offer the potential for whatever they might need. We do home care. We also have a hospice program, and we also have what we call home assistance, which is a supplement to what the insurances will pay for. So the patient would obviously have to pay privately for the home assistance, but it gives an additional piece to make sure that the patient has the proper personnel in their home to ensure that they're safe and able to remain in their house. The whole focus of home care is to keep the patient at home. So we're not putting a social worker in the house to, determine whether they go to a nursing home eventually. Mm. Our goal is to keep the patient where they want to be, in their own environment, on their own schedule, without having to fit into a compartment of when they get pills or when they get their meals or whatever else. If they can stay in their own home with the insurances paying for the bulk of what we're going to do, that ensures usually people get better quicker.
They get better faster because they're in their own environment and they're more comfortable.
Correct.
And they're not frightened.
Right. And they have their mental well-being is, a huge piece getting better. So
very important.
If they can have their pets around them or their family members around mm-hmm. them or their grandkids coming and going or, their grandchild sitting on the bed reading them a story, when they're recuperating, all the better.
These are all things that are so important. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a reason why you have the school nurse in the school, and that's because
right.
of...
Right. We have... we've been committed to putting a personnel through our agency up at the school forever. The other schools in the area have hired their own nurses through the Board of Eds of those different individuals, but it has worked out very well. One reason that we do it is because we are... We're the Salisbury Visiting Nurses, and we have a grammar school here in town, mm-hmm. and they aligned with that piece that, the nurse would go up part-time. The nurse would usually, in the past, go up only in the mornings.
Oh, yes.
And be there only a few hours, and then, there was up to, we put what we call a certified health aide in there in the afternoons to sort of oversee anything else that might happen or to be able to call a nurse if they needed help. But you did not need that full-time person. However... situations have evolved so that you have more kids with diabetic issues or
asthma.
Medication needs or asthmatics or
food allergies.
They might be a little bit physically challenged or whatever else. They need special equipment or adaptive equipment to get through their day as in the classrooms. So all the schools have put a full-time nurse in the piece. And we have contracted with the Board of Ed of Salisbury to put a nurse up there full-time. And it's been a huge, huge benefit to the school system.
It would be.
I think for just peace of mind for the parents knowing there's a school nurse on site, the teachers have peace of mind that they don't have to deal with it. You know, if there's a problem in the classroom, they can send the child to the nurse. And we've been blessed with the nurses that are up there.
Could you name a few of the nurses that have been up there?
Well, Dorothy Sherwood, Marion Romeo was up there. They were longstanding employees of the agency.
I remember
Sharon Day was up there.
Sharon Day
she was part time up there, and then part time would be in the field mm-hmm. visiting patients. And that was a really valuable piece because her day comprised. She'd be up at the school in the morning, and oftentimes in the afternoon she would be making home visits to the same families that there might be physical issues or needs of the child at the school. So she would go out and visit the parents and the child in the afternoon in the home environment. So that was a huge benefit to that piece. We've since had Martha Fitzgerald became a full-time school nurse. Mm-hmm. And now we're blessed with Mary Cadman, who's up there full-time. So it's really a huge benefit to the families and the kids to have that
backup
quality of care for what they need.
Now, you said something about private funding for this home assistance. How do you get your money for that?
Well, the families pay, the individuals pay themselves an hourly rate. We put a personal care assistant in the house, that we have a director that goes out and evaluates the home, the situation, what the needs of the patient are, what the families are looking for. Sometimes it's a companion. Sometimes it's somebody to help with bathing and homemaking and meal preparation. It might be a 24-hour situation where they have several different people. We also have the ability to put a live-in caregiver in place should they want to just hire a one person. The issue with that, though, is that person has to be guaranteed at least 6 to 8 hours of sleep a day. And oftentimes that can happen, but if you have somebody that has a lot of needs, one person isn't going to be able to handle that usually.
Who's the director that goes in and does this assessment?
Her name is Brenda Fife, and she is a full-time director of the Home Assistance Program. She does all of the evaluations. She goes out and talks to people in the community about what her program is able to do. They take patients to appointments. They often will supplement, like I said, the insurances will pay for a nurse to go in and a therapist to go in and a home health aide for a couple times a week for an hour. The families then decide that they want additional help, so they will purchase, 3, 6, 8 hours of extra help from the home assistance program. But Brenda does the on-site evaluation and talking to the family just to see what the needs are and what the interest is of what they want that person to do. And then she is very good at aligning the proper caregiver with that patient, just from her assessment of the patient. The people that she hires, she actually does a online evaluation where they have to answer questions to do. It's almost like a psychological testing, whether or not they are really appropriate for caring for elderly people or a homebound patient.
It's a special gift.
So we want to make sure that these are people that really have the personality and the demeanor to handle a confused patient, a person that's repetitive, without losing patience, that type of thing.
Not something that I could do. I know that.
Well, I think everybody is tested in different ways, so people become teachers and handle 40 kids
that I could do.
But it really is a special gift, and you want to make sure that for the quality of care that we're expecting, and our agency has always had really
very high standards
we want people to do. So we take great pride in the people that we train and orient. We also take all these people in for the first visit. We don't just say to them, this is where the house is, and go to that house and meet the patient. We actually take the person to that first meeting to make sure that things get settled, that we show them what we want them to do also, and run through the plan of care that we expect them to follow through on. So it's really us taking responsibility and making sure that these people are appropriately placed.
And
because we want peace of mind for the families.
It's a wonderful service. You know? Having been through it slightly, mm-hmm. it's a wonderful service, and it's a great comfort.
Yeah, and we don't want people to have to worry. You know, if you're a daughter that lives in New York City and you want to get a caregiver for your loved one up here, you don't want to have to go to your job every day and have 50,000 phone calls with issues and problems and concerns. You want your loved one to know that they're settling in. And it does take a little bit of time. You know, everybody has to adapt. Mm-hmm. But once that caregiver gets in place and the repetition of them coming back is there, I think it's a huge comfort for that person that works or has to go out.
Yep.
That's sort of in that sandwich generation of taking care of their own kids and taking care of their parents as well, that you can go off to work or go off to your whatever duties that you have. And have peace of mind knowing that your loved one is cared for.
I wish I'd had that with my father because I would get phone calls at school and I was torn. What do I do? I can't leave my kids. They have to be at such and such a place. And I'm supposed to handle this other issue. Right. And it was very stressful.
Right.
Very stressful.
You know, it's interesting because you drive by these... I've driven by neighborhoods and it says, you know, drive like you live here so that people aren't speeding. We always, and I've always interviewed people when we want them to be personal care assistants or home health aides. Would I want this person taking care of my parents is how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, either they're going to be able to do it well or they aren't cut out to do it.
Yeah.
Because there are other jobs out there for people, but this really requires a nice touch, a gentle touch, mm-hmm. a nice word, you know, not snapping and barking at people.
But firm.
And with a lot of direction.
You have to be firm.
Yep.
Because my father could be a real piece of work at times. And if you weren't firm with him, he'd walk all over you.
Right.
And we privately got a lady that was great for him, mm-hmm. and it worked out very well. But it was done privately. It was done through no agency because my dad lives in another state. And how much I wished he had lived in Connecticut because I knew what the services were here, and they were, at that point, ever so much better.
Well, the other piece to that is when you have the agency involved in taking care of the patient, and and we put the home health aide in, the nurse that's responsible for that household, or the therapist, whoever is the lead discipline in there, they're responsible for making sure that the plan of care gets followed through on, that the person is not just watching TV, that patient is getting their bath done, or their shower done, or their skin care done, or that they're brushing their teeth, or they're getting out for a walk, or that, you know, somebody's reading to them if they want to be read to. And we're responsible for that person. So we want to make sure that the plan of care gets executed, that the care is done by standards that we expect them to be done by, and that the family has peace of mind in the process. So that's the other piece, to know that there's a nurse overseeing that caregiver, that the caregiver is not just running amok in the house.
God forbid she should run amok.
Well, right.
Well, it makes...
But it happens in
places. It's a different layer.
Yeah.
And you need the supervision.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about hospice. Who runs that?
We have a separate director, Donna DiMartino, who we are extremely blessed with having, who has a great wealth of information and expertise in caring for the end-of-life patient. She does training for our professional staff as well as our home health aid staff. She also does our volunteers. Under hospice, you can have a nurse, health aid, social workers, but part of the program is that you have this team in place with a spiritual director. We have a medical director who oversees us. We have a pharmacy person on the discipline team who helps us looking at meds and what's most effective for this patient, or, you know, this medication might have an adverse effect with this medication. So, you know, we might have to change things. And then we also have the volunteers who actually sit in the house with the patient. They don't do hands-on care, but they can read to the patient, they can hold hands, they can chat, they can fix a meal, they can go grocery shopping for that loved one. They can be with that patient so the family member can go out to the movies or something.
And that's necessary. As a caregiver, 24/7,
I've
been there,
break.
You need a break.
Yep.
You need to get away from it because it can be all-consuming. Mm-hmm. And I only did it, you know, for a short period of time, but it swallows you if you don't have backup.
Right.
And you have to have backup that you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that doesn't come automatically. Right. You have to develop it, and it's something that I found with taking care of my husband, that this organization was wonderful, and they were there for him, but for me also. Mm-hmm. And even after he passed away, you came back to see how I was doing, mm-hmm. which meant a great deal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, because I personally have been involved with two different systems, my dad in one state and my husband in this state, I can make a comparison, and you've got it hands down.
Well, that's good to know. We are very proud of what we do. The other piece to hospice now, because it's a whole new program, hospice follows through with the family members for 13 months. So that's a nice piece wow. for reassurance to have. And sometimes it's nice for the patient to know mm-hmm. that, you know, when they're gone, somebody's going to be following through with their loved one for 13 months. Home visits, phone calls, cards, the volunteers go back to see the family members. It doesn't just turn off.
It just doesn't end.
Once the person has passed on, it just doesn't stop the concern and the follow-up and the care that that loved one gets. We always do the whole package of, you know, we're not just taking care of the patient in home care, we're taking care of the whole family. So if there's a wife or kids or, you know, grandchildren, we're also there for them and to incorporate them in the piece of, you know, getting the patient better. But in hospice care, it doesn't end at when we discharge the patient. We continue with the 13 months, and that's a real comfort. I've had numbers of patients say to me when we admit somebody to hospice, you know, just to know that my wife is going to have somebody checking yes. on them after, because that's a real concern, and it really eats at people.
It does.
You know, having to wonder what's going to happen to my loved one when I'm gone.
Because you have all of the business of the death, the grieving, the funeral.
And then what?
And then right. what?
Right.
And it's a chasm. Uh-huh. Big, empty chasm. Right. And nobody cares. Right. I mean, I don't have any family, so I know what it's like. And it just ends. And right. yes, you've got friends, but there isn't anybody checking to say, you know, are you all
How
right?
How are you?
Are yeah. you eating? You know, are you getting out? Are you doing anything for fun? Mm-hmm. And that's the part that... my husband wasn't in hospice, but that's the part that was missing for me. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't... I was able to take care of myself because I wanted to. But it's a piece that is extremely important, and a piece that I found was missing for me,
right.
even though I wasn't in a hospice program, and neither was my husband.
The other piece to know is that, you know, it depends on age, too, how people can get out. But if you have an elderly couple and that mm-hmm. spouse is not physically able to get out, they become very kind of reclusive. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that that doesn't happen to the person. We also offer a bereavement group, and there will be one starting up in the fall again. We do it usually in the fall and the spring. People don't come out. They don't want to come out in the winter as
no.
much. But it's for anybody that has the need. And we really advertise it through our hospice patients, you know, or through our groups that we follow after somebody's passed on. We make sure that they have it. But anybody in the community, it's open to. And it's a really valuable tool. We did it. It originally was going to be like every couple weeks. And the group decided that they thought it would be beneficial for every week.
Yeah.
So the facilitators adjusted their schedule so that they could meet weekly with the group that had decided that's what they'd like to do. So it certainly becomes what's best for the group as a whole.
And the groups change.
And the groups change, obviously. And some people come back. They need to come back for that support, and it's there, which is, you know, it doesn't mean that, okay, you've had your 6 weeks of bereavement group, and then you're done. Some people yeah. really need it as an ongoing process,
yeah.
so it's available to anybody. And the other piece we do, we did a program through the local library on end-of-life issues.
Yes.
Which was a huge plus for the community. And this fall we'll be doing another group on end-of-life issues. There's a local woman out of Cornwall, Susan O'Brien, who has done a book on end-of-life. And she and our hospice director, Donna DiMartino, are coordinating these programs over a period of time. The first one is September 10th at 5 o'clock at the library, or I'm sorry, at Noble. And that's going to be an open forum for, one, the discussion that will be opened up with the use of this woman's book, but also then with Donna's expertise in helping people discuss it, because it's really...
It's tough.
It's tough to know how to approach and how to open the discussion, mm-hmm. but it's wonderful to be able to have a comfort level to have the discussion. So it's really helping to ease people's familiarity in the community with how to deal with this.
I got a funny story. We had the lady that came to talk to us about end-of-life issues, and she had her list, and you know, we had everything done, and she finally, in frustration, says, well, I bet you don't have your cremation case. Mm-hmm. Foster says, go into the den, Jane, and I brought out his cremation case that his nephew had made for him. She says, you're prepared.
Right, right.
But we, because of the age difference between my husband and I, and his four children being my age, we had discussed a lot of this because we're both very realistic people. Mm-hmm. We had plan A, if he goes first, plan B, if I go first, plan C, if we go together. And we had a comfort level. I don't think his children had the same comfort level that he and I had, but it worked out beautifully. Mm-hmm. It really did. Now, I'd like to go on to... Do you have other organizations like Family Services or the Bissell Fund that work with you?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
could
we
you
do.
Tell me a little
I
bit
will.
About that?
We have our town social worker is in our building with Salisbury Family Services. She's, well, as long as I've known, when we were at the railroad station, mm-hmm. Barbara Tobias, who was wonderful town social worker also, was in the building with us a couple days a week. Right now we have Patrice McGrath, who is the town social worker. So we work very closely with her. We'll often go to her, you know, we admit a patient and the patient might have issues with being able to pay for their medications, mm-hmm. or how do I get all, you know, all of a sudden they've gone from 2 pills to 40 pills.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they've been in the hospital with cardiac issues, so now their meds have multiplied, and they are having trouble meeting the needs of the finances. So we'll often go to Patrice to see if there are fundings available that she can help with. She does fuel assistance. She does medication issues. She does medical issues, period. We're very lucky in this town to have the Bissell Fund, which has been started, a long time ago, but it's there for medical issues for people. And other towns, we work closely with the town social workers in all the towns we service. We do service 13 communities in the northwest corner. All of Region 1 plus Goshen and Norfolk is what we serve. But each of the towns, you know, the Cornwalls are all divided up into three different areas. You know, you've got Cornwall Bridge, depending on the post offices. Uh-huh. So they become three instead of one Cornwall. But we work very closely with the town social workers. So whether it's for hearing aids or glasses, mm-hmm. or medications or transportation or whatever it might be, we do have to tap into the town social workers.
But it's there.
It's there.
Yeah.
And they are very generous. I mean, we've never had an issue. When you present the case and the concerns and the needs of the families in the communities, the social workers are always very readily responding.
Always responding.
Yes.
It's a very, you know, Salisbury is a very unusual community, because whether it's the visiting nurses or the volunteer ambulance or the fire department,
right.
if you ask, you receive.
Right. And the people at the churches always rally, and you know,
always.
I mean, the food needs are met, and we have a food pantry here as part of Family Services that is very well received,
mm-hmm.
and utilized. So yes, we're very blessed.
We really are blessed. No.
And then we work with Owl's Kitchen and the Fishes and Loaves in Canaan and trying to get food items and things of that sort for people.
Then your food pantry here is separate from Owl's Kitchen?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
It
that
is.
I didn't know.
Yep. Yep, we have our own food pantry. I mean, people do access Owl's Kitchen also, but we have a pretty significant storage, which is part of Family Services that Patrice handles. Oh. So the food items and the, you know, the... paper towels and the toilet paper needs and all that are met.
All right. Tell me about Pat Tremblay. When did she come?
Pat Tremblay came in 2009, and she just left in April of 2013. She was our executive director. And right now, Michelle Gorat, who was our chief financial officer, she has now become our executive director. Michelle has a wealth of medical knowledge and expertise. She worked at Sharon Hospital prior to coming to us in the financial department, and then came to us as our financial guru. And then with her expertise, the board felt that she had the knowledge of the home care piece and the interest of the community at large to help broaden the scope of the Salisbury Visiting Nurses. So it's an on, it's constantly evolving.
Excellent.
You know, we used to just cover the town of Salisbury, gradually expanded out to Canaan and Sharon and Falls Village, and now we're down into Cornwall, Norfolk, Kent, Goshen, with patients. It just becomes a, you know, wherever we get the referrals, if they're towns that we service and we can take care of the patient at home and everybody's on board, then we go with it.
Wonderful. Tell me a little bit about the board. How many on the board?
There are, I believe, there are currently 15 people on the board, and they are represented from all the different towns, you know, Sharon, primarily Sharon and Canaan and Salisbury and Cornwall at this point.
And what does the board actually do?
The board actually oversees and helps guide us. One, they are looking at our financial interests, but they also help with direction of the needs of the community and the people we serve and how we can serve the community better at large. They do fundraising. They do research. They're always looking at the marketing that we do to see how else we can expand our scope.
Excellent. Before I ask you about the Nightingale Award, are there anything that you want to add about the Salisbury Visiting Nurses that I haven't covered?
No, I think you've been pretty comprehensive on what we do, and
I
think you've covered pretty much all the details of everything we're looking to do.
Now, I want specifically for you to tell me about the Nightingale Award.
Well, the Nightingale Award was a very nice recognition of me. It was voted on by the executive director and my peers at large. It's an award that was developed. It originally started down in the New Haven area and it was to recognize nurses within the hospital setting. It now has expanded out to nursing homes, clinics, the medical professionals at the prisons in the state that do wonderful work, and in home care as well. It has expanded into the Hartford-Litchfield territories out of the New Haven area, and they felt that it was a good recognition of people that have done significant work, leadership work, community work, patient care, interest of the patient first, that type of thing, in recognizing individuals. This year there were 114 of us recognized at a dinner in early May, and it was held in Hartford, and I was deeply honored, one, to have received the award, but to also stand with the people. I mean, I was fascinated by the people that work even in the prisons, that you never even think of the medical staff that take care of the people in the prisons, and the nice things that they do for people, you know, especially somebody that's at their end of life or they're very ill or something, and they do the little things that, you know, mean a lot.
The little things that do mean a lot.
You know, the person that all they wanted, you know, I would love to have some chocolate someday, and this person made sure that they brought in something chocolate every day to this person that was in hospice care in this prison bed. So, I was more fascinated with the scope of all the people that serve the community at large in the state. We really do have, and all different. You know, some people are in pediatrics and home care and hospice and clinics, and they do the dialysis unit, so it really brought all different aspects of nursing. It's just not, you know, the hospital setting anymore. It's all the different places that nurses go, and it's amazing to me the numbers of jobs that are out there and the differences in what everybody does. So,
because you think medical, you think nurse.
Right.
But there's all of this
Different levels, and yeah, you're not just, you know, it's not just working in a hospital and taking care of people in a bed. It's just, you know, the little things that you do for people in the clinics even, and the food pantries and things of that sort. So I was very honored and deeply touched that I was recognized by this. So.
Your peers appreciate all that you do.
Well, and I appreciate what they do. I mean, we really are a team and a very... They're a very dedicated and caring group. I mean, people that, you know, it's not just an 8-to-4 job here. I mean, I've just completed evaluations, and I said this to several people that, you know, they're here until 4, 5, 6 o'clock at night finishing up work, phone calls. They go out and see people. You know, you get a phone call at 4:45 that, you know, I'm still on the road and I'm going to go see so-and-so because I just was concerned about them yesterday and I think I'm going to follow up today. You know, it's not just... doing one thing. It's the care and the concern, and that's what you want in the medical profession. You want people that it's not just an 8-to-4 job and a punching clock. You know, it's the heart and the soul of it. So,
Kathy, thank you. Thank you so much.
Is this okay?
This has been a wonderful interview. This is good.
Thank you.
You've done good, lady.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I never know what people want or what, you know, what to say about it or anything. So
you've done beautifully.
Good.
Thank you.